What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to Marshall Time. What's going on, bro?
What's going on, bro? How you doing?
Man, I can't complain. Yes, I'm still wearing Eagles gear in April. You know what I'm saying? Debuting the Super Bowl shirt.
Yes, sir. You know what's crazy? I just got my Jalen Carter Super Bowl jersey in the mail.
Oh, you copped the Carter jersey? Let me see.
Yeah, I got the Carter jersey.
That's the Kelly Green?
No, this is the Super Bowl jersey.
Oh, for real? Oh, dang, yeah, with the Super Bowl patch? Dang, I didn't know you got one of those.
I wanted to get Saquon, but they sold out. Then I wanted to get
Jalen Carter's a good one, though. That's a good one.
I was born in 98. I'm like, all right.
Now, let us see that. Let us see that real quick.
You know. He basically saved the season for us. On the Rams game, he came up big. Had to cop the JC. Just came in today.
Okay. I respect it. Listen, we rocking Eagles gear all spring, all summer. That's just something they got to deal with. You feel me? Like, it could be the NBA playoffs, March Madness. I'm wearing Eagles something. Socks, shirt, Scully, scarf. That's just what it is. When you're a champion, you can do that. You know what I'm saying? So, speaking of March Madness, we weren't able to talk about the happenings of March Madness. We did our preview, obviously. And the men's and women's tournament ended on Sunday and Monday. We're going to break it down from each tournament. First, let's talk about the men's, since that was the final game of the college basketball season. Yours truly, I picked Florida and Houston in the championship game. I picked Florida to win the championship game. And the Gators did what I thought they would do. They won the championship. So salute to the Gators for getting the job done. For me, look, they were playing it close throughout the tournament. But when we talked about this tournament, I said, look, it's all about which team has most room for error, right? And so things aren't going to go your way all the time. You might have a bad shooting night. One of your top players may be off. Walter Clayton was off in the national championship game. You might have foul trouble. Player might get hurt. But do you have other guys who can step up in the event of things not going your way? And so we saw that with Florida each step of the way, especially against Houston. Will Richard had a great first half. You know, Elijah Martin came up huge defensively. The big guys did what they had to do. And so Florida, to me, ever since I started watching them in February in SEC play, I said, look, this team has the guard play. They have the big guys who can play. They have multiple guys who can get their shots off. They can defend. They have a great coach. He was unproven come tournament time, right? But if they're really locked in like I think they can on a six-game situation, you have to win six games to win it all. I felt like they were the most equipped to do it offensively, defensively. They have a couple pros on that roster. They have the experience. And so what they show is what – honestly, they throughout the tournament, they – I don't think they've even played their. I don't even think they even played their best compared to what I saw, like in February in the SEC tournament. Like this Florida team probably could have played better, right? But they showed that they were so good that even in times of questioning, okay, can they pull through? Can they pull through here? They were able to rise up, and so very impressed with Florida. And yeah, like I just felt like they were the best team, and they proved it. You could talk about, you know, which team has the most lottery picks, which, you know, the analytics, this and that, whatever. But when it comes to watching the game and seeing which team has pound for pound the best roster, the deepest roster, I don't think it's a question that Florida was that team. So, yeah, that's what I'll say to start off.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. And on top of that, you got to talk about the play of Walter Clayton Jr. Like, bro, all season he was a great scorer for them, a great leader, great floor general. But in tournament time, he just turned it up a whole nother notch. Like every opponent they played, as the stakes got higher, the pressure got bigger, he just stepped up every time. And even in the tournament game, I mean the championship game, he started out slow. Like he didn't have a lot of points the first half, but down the stretch, he made a few big shots, and it was a close game all the way. So those were the shots that you needed. And I really just hope scouts and GMs don't overthink it. I know he's on the smaller side. I know he's 22. We talked about this before, though. Just like Jalen Brunson, man, like you got a guy that's a veteran. You know, he has experience. He's a veteran in the college game. He can create his own shot, and he can shoot it at a really good clip. And he has great range, too. Not saying he has to be a top five pick. He doesn't even have to be a top 10 pick, but he should at least be top 14, top 15, if you ask me. Like, I just hope teams don't, you know, have him going second round. Late first at most is what I could see for him, just off of how he played in the tournament. Like, don't overthink this one, because it's a lot of teams who could use a player like Walter Clayton. And, you know, get him, you know, if your team is good at developing players, get him and get him, you know, get his body up to date for the pro game, pro level. And, you know, let's just see how he pans out, because I think he has a chance.
Yeah, I think Walter Clayton is – he's a first-round pick. I thought he was a first-round pick throughout the season, but – tournament time, he showed the world like what he really can do when he's locked in, and he was a special college player. Now, obviously, being a special college player, being a special NBA player are two different things, but I think he has all the tools needed to be a real productive player in the NBA, and I don't see why he can't be a top 15 pick. I don't care about, oh, he's been in college for too long, he's older, he's 6'2", 6'3". I don't care about any of that. The guy can play. He has a quick release on the jumper, smooth handle, strong build. He can lock down and defend when needed to. Like, I saw some things defensively from him that I didn't expect to see. And so I think he's more than capable of being a top 15 pick, because you see every year, you see these teams reach for these guys come draft time. 2 years later, like, wait, they were picked over him?
Yep.
That guy's not even in the league anymore. He's not even in the G League, right? He's somewhere in China playing. So, you know, all these scouts and these teams, you know, nitpicking these quote unquote older guys, but you wound up drafting Mo Bamba top 10 looking stupid. It's like what are we talking about? Like, what are we talking about here? Who is that?
Zaire Smith over Mikal.
Yeah, what are we talking about? And so I'm tired of all the excuses. Can they play ball or can they not play ball? That, like, I think sometimes they overcomplicate the process. He's 22.
Yeah, he's 22.
I mean, come on, like, what are we talking about? He's not 30.
19-year-old that's raw and probably not going to pan out.
And the 19-year-old that you draft, you're probably not even going to have the patience to develop him.
Yeah,
you probably don't even know how to develop him. We see it. You don't know what you're doing with these guys. You don't. So I ain't trying to hear it. For Houston, my main critique about Houston is always offensively, sometimes it just looks ugly. It's nasty. And we saw it at the end of that ball game. Why is LJ Crier not the guy to say, clear it out? I know they were trying to run a play, but at that point, I have two issues. You let the shot clock run all the way down. Why not try to get a quick attack to the bucket, maybe get a foul? All day, all night, throughout the first half, especially, Roberts and Crier could get to their spots and try to get a shot off, right? Why not try to do that? If you miss, if Florida gets the rebound, quick foul, try to extend the game. Why are you milking the clock out? And so you're now forced to make a quick decision. You know, these guys really, when the lights turn bright, sometimes not all of them want that moment or built for that moment. We saw with Sharp. You saw what he did. I don't know what he was thinking. I would rather you take a contested three-pointer than just do what he did. Just jump up and let go of the ball. Like, I don't know what that was. So, yeah, Houston, man, like, it's unfortunate. Kelvin Sampson's a great coach, but you got to execute better. And when they say, did Houston choke? I mean, or, you know, did Houston give that game away? Did Florida earn that win? Yeah, Florida earned it, because defensively they did what they had to do. But for Houston, man, you got to execute better. And that's what comes down to a champ. Being a championship team is executing in those pressure moments. And Houston proved that they couldn't do it on that night. That's what it comes down to. They did not execute when the lights and the pressure were the most intense.
Yeah, and I think it's sad for Houston just because the way they, you know, pulled out the Duke game, I thought that, you know, this was their chance. Like, this was a golden opportunity for them. And honestly, they controlled majority of the game. It's just a few turnovers, a few mistakes. Those they're like last three possessions, really, because LJ Crier
was nasty.
LJ Crier had a turnover. Then they had the turnover after that, because the play, even the spacing on the second to last play, was messy. And then that last play again was just like, bro, what are we doing? Like, the design, the play designs, the execution, everything was wrong for those plays. If you ask me, they should have went LJ Crier and Evans, two-man game, get the best shot possible. Just how Duke went to Cooper Flagg, ISO. You know, he missed the shot, but it's a shot we seen him make. You know, you got to live with the result. In those times, you got to put the ball in your best player hands and let him go to work. That's why Walter Clayton is so special. Like, he's the most clutch player in college. So teams, I just hope they don't overlook that, man.
Yeah, and Florida, like, after their UConn win, I was watching a show just to see what they were saying about the tournament so far, and they were kind of questioning Florida because they had to come back against UConn. And for me, it was like, oh, against a two-time defending champ coached by, you know, Hurley, a team that's not going to just give it away easily, I was kind of encouraged by what they did. I'm like, okay, that's not an easy spot to be at. A number one seed, you're playing the two-time defending champ, you're on the ropes, and they rallied to win. They did it against Texas Tech. They did it against Auburn. Watching that Houston game, you're like, man, this may be the moment where Florida is just too little too late. But a part of me was like, I've seen them do it, and they prove it once again when it seems like they can't come back, when it seems like it's just the shots not falling, foul trouble, whatever the case may be. They just find a way in the pressure filled moments, and so Florida is a well deserved champion. They earned it throughout the way. Just to see the comebacks that they've had to make, I can't recall a championship run where a team has had to make so many comebacks. Like, that's insane. And so this is one of the more memorable runs from a championship team in recent years that I can remember. So salute to Florida. Switching to the women's side, the UConn ladies beat the defending champ, South Carolina. For me, this was about Paige Beckers. I'm so happy for her. I've enjoyed watching UConn women's basketball forever. They've been the premier standard in women's basketball. Tennessee with Pat Summitt back in the day is up there for sure. But, you know, Dawn Staley's done a great job at South Carolina. Like, there's been teams that have been on the rise, but UConn, Gina Auriemma, they're the standard, and they've weathered through different eras. They started this in the 90s, and they've produced Maya Moore, Brianna Stewart, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird. Like, I can go on and on about the greats that they've produced, right? Some players you might forget to mention, Rebecca Lobo. And now Paige Beckers, accomplished everything you could in a career, had injuries, but to finally cap her career off with a championship, it was exciting to see. That's now 12 national championships for UConn. That's the most in history. They've made a bunch of Final Fours. I mean, this is their first one since 2016. What more can you say? And I think with Paige Beckers, I think a lot of people forget the role she's played in the growth of the women's game. You know, I know we talk about last year, right, with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, Juju Watkins coming up this year. But Paige Beckers is – you got to mention Paige. I think sometimes people forget to mention her when it comes to the evolution and the growth. She was the first high school girls player to be on the cover of Slam Magazine. People may forget or people don't realize that, but she was a big deal when it comes to those viral clips and her high school clips. And she was a big deal. And those injuries set her back for a little bit, but she bounced back and she's projected to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. And so just excited for what she's accomplished. So just wanted to give a salute to Paige and the great career that she's had, but she should be mentioned when it comes to this new era of women's player. Paige should get her flowers. A lot of people want to mention other names during this time, but Paige Beckers, this was your moment and you got it done. Congratulations.
Yeah, Paige is a baller, man. She plays the right way. You know, like, it's not much more you can say, like, from offense to defense to playmaking, rebounding, just all around. She's a great player. Big shout out to Ozzie Foote too, with the injuries that she's faced. For her to go out there and ball in that chip game was awesome. So you got to tip your head off to UConn. Like you said, man, the way Gino, you know, every year has that program, you know, at the top, elite. Like, that, you want to talk about a powerhouse? That's the powerhouse, like, across all sports. Like, you know, UConn women's basketball, when you think of greatness, that's what you think of. Like, they're in that clough of teams. So it's definitely awesome to see them keep doing their thing.
We're going to keep it in a college game, and we got to talk about the major topic, these big money deals when it comes to the transfer portal and NIL. The biggest one recently was our boy from Delaware, Rob Wright, going from Baylor to BYU. And I remember when I first texted you the news, I was like, yo, it got to be the NIL, because you think next year with VJ Edgecombe going to the draft, Rob Wright, that's your squad.
Yeah.
That's your squad in Waco, Texas, right? But that money be calling. And according to reports, he's getting paid $3 million to play for BYU. And honestly, what other reason would a guy like Rob Wright have to go to BYU, which is in Utah? That's all I'm gonna say. What are we talking about here? He's not going from Texas to Utah just for the strength, right? So you don't even got to tell me how much he's making. I already know he's making a nice amount of money. And so yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the NIL, players demanding money, players entering the transfer portal. A lot of haters, in my opinion. There was a quote that I saw today from Terrence Mann, who plays for the Hawks. He's now the assistant. So a lot of these programs are hiring general managers to help out with like acquiring players and deals and things of that nature. Trey Young is an assistant GM for Oklahoma. Terrence Mann is an assistant GM at Florida State. So Terrence Mann says, you have kids that average 6 points a game asking for $500,000 to $600,000. That's the asking price, but you're not that good. I had to look at his contract. Terrence Mann is making $11 million this year. He's averaging 7 points a game. Make it make sense. Maybe it's me. Am I tripping? Maybe it's like I'm trying to figure out why are you pocket watching these kids' money? Why are you pocket watching? For years, these programs, the NCAA, these TV stations, these networks have made millions and billions off these kids. These video game companies have made millions and billions off these kids. So now, because you're an assistant GM with Florida State and you're dealing with players leaving the program and asking for money, that's why you have a problem with it. But if you were in the same position, if you were playing in the game right now and had the ability to make money as a college student, you'd be trying to make as much as you can.
Yeah.
It's just nasty hate to me from coaches to former players. The former player speaking out on this is just
– that's crazy.
That's disgusting to me. And for me, I'm not in the business of caping for corporations. I'm sorry, I'm not. I can't. I've seen enough. I've experienced enough. No, get your money. I'm not upset. And in my eyes, these kids peep the game in America. It's a lot of overpaid individuals in all industries.
Yeah.
Coaches and players included.
Yep.
So y'all been taking advantage of us for all these years. Run it. Get your money, Rob, right? $3 million to go to Utah to play ball? I salute you. I'm not going to hate on that. You're not committing a crime. You're playing the game that you love. You worked hard in school to make it into college. You worked hard in your game to be good enough to get a scholarship. And your game has been good enough to leverage this amount of money. Now, I hope these programs are able to educate these players on how to manage this and invest this. That's what I want to see. That's my opening statement. Terrence, man, you wildin'. Because I don't know if you're good enough to make $11 million. So, yeah.
He's getting paid off what they thought he was going to be able to do in L.A. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Far as the NIL thing, to piggyback off what you said, with the NCAA, they've been making money off of, student athletes for years. And that's why I don't really have a problem with none of this right now, because – it's fresh. Like, it's something different, something new. For years, we've been saying, yo, the players, they got to get some type of compensation. So now this is what it is. I do understand the argument of it's kind of taken away from what college, what we've known it to be, what it is. Because now we're seeing kids just leave because something just didn't go their way, right? I do agree with that. I agree that something has to be done as far as that, but I don't know what really can be done, honestly, because at the end of the day, you're giving out money to certain players to go to different schools. I mean, if the player, like you said, Rob Rice, getting $3 million to go to BYU, let's go. I mean, I'm pretty sure almost every kid his age would do that. Like, this, it's a no-brainer. My only thing is I don't like how some of these kids are like RJ Lewis, for example. He had a good season with St. John's. But, we know what happened in the tournament. He got benched because he wasn't playing well. So he faced some adversity. Mm-hmm. Now he wants to leave St. John's and Rick Pitino. And that's fine. But to me, it's like, you're taking the easy way out. Like, you mad because he benched you, but you did deserve to get benched. RJ Lewis, before this season, you weren't really a big name in college. You know, your name is even on NBA draft boards off of this season. So you do got to give some credit to Rick Pitino and the coaching staff at St. John's. Now you just going to leave. It's like, and I don't really feel that. But at the same time, that's the era we're in. Like, in the transfer portal, it's going to be hard for a lot of these coaches to, like, really to hold kids accountable and keep kids happy and to manage the program. It's going to be hard because now the minute a student athlete feels like something's not going right for them, they can go ahead and transfer. They can go ahead and transfer. And we know with a lot of these athletes, there's a lot of D1 programs that, you know, are willing to take some of these kids that may have not been so, you know, coveted at other schools, that, you know, they're going to get that NIL to come to a different school. It might be a smaller school. It might not be, but I just feel like a few years from now, there's going to have to be some type of tweaks and changes. I don't know what they could do exactly, but I mean, for right now, like we saying, man, let these kids get their money, because for years, y'all been running it up on them. So I don't see a problem with, you know, what's going on right now, but I can definitely see, you know, the friction and, you know, the controversy that can come with it down the line. But this is what we're doing right now.
For years, the NCAA has just made a mockery of amateurism and saying that these kids are student athletes, students first. I don't think they're students. They've never been students first. When you asking these kids in the middle of the school year, throughout the week, to travel. Nowadays, it's crazy because somehow Rutgers and USC are in the same conference. Make that make sense.
Yeah.
So now we're getting on planes to travel from Jersey to California and vice versa. But I'm a student. I'm playing on a network that's making millions of dollars. What do I get out of it?
Right.
And let's not forget, before NIL, programs were still paying these players. They were giving them gifts, promising jobs for family members and friends and high school coaches, AAU coaches, giving them cars. Boosters have always had an impact when it came to recruiting. NIL isn't new. It's just legal now. It's just a legal situation. Mm-hmm. And so anytime you see the confusion and the chaos when it comes to the portal and NIL, I look at the adults in the room. You created this environment of hustling and trying to wield your power and, you know, try to use whatever advantages you have to recruit a player and toss him to the side if he's no longer used. Like, we don't talk about those stories because you're not promised a spot for next year, right? You're not. They can let you go if you get hurt. If you're no longer of service, you're gone. They don't have to bring you back. And so we talk about the transfer portal and kids transferring when things don't go their way. Yeah, that's definitely an issue. But where did they learn this behavior? You look at their high school track record. Most of these kids are bouncing around at three high schools in 4 years, four high schools in 4 years sometimes, right? Why is that? Well, because of coaches coddling them and saying they're the best thing. You can go to the league in 2 years, come to my school. So they're learning these behaviors because of these adults in the room. And so once they get to college, they've been so used to being put on a pedestal. They don't care what Rick Pitino got to say. What do Pitino mean to them? Like, you know, so yes, we're blaming these kids for taking advantage of the opportunities that they have when they've had to see coaches give a coach gives me a scholarship and he says, look, I want to be like a father figure to you for the next 4 years. Well, after my freshman year, you jump in on the next plane to the next highest paying job as a coach.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about here? These are learned behaviors that come from the adults. You have been acting like the players are acting, and now you're criticizing the players for the same behavior that you were doing for years. What do the coaches do? when a big money opportunity, what do they say? I'm focused on the job right here in this school. I want to be here for the foreseeable future. Anytime a coach says that, I say you're full of it. Because next year, the next big paying job, you're out of there.
You'll be going.
So what are we talking about here? So these coaches that are criticizing the players can miss me. You're just upset that now with the NIL, it's an even playing field, right? BYU has the funds now. They're not playing with y'all. They can get an AJ DeBanza. So sorry, Duke, Kentucky, Carolina, Kansas. It's no longer you guys just dominating, getting the top players now. You know, we're going to spread this out. May the best boosters win. May the best NIL situation win. It is what it is. So, yeah, that's my spill on NIL transfer portal. Let's head to the pro game now. NBA playoffs start next weekend. That's crazy, right? We got the play-in that starts next week, and I think the first round starts Saturday. Happy to say that the Sixers won't be in it, but we've locked in. I think we're in the safe zone. Maybe. You never know with the lottery. The lottery could get crazy. We're still not safe yet because those fools decided to try to win when in December and November they should have just packed it up.
Literally.
We would have been in running for Cooper Flag, but now look at you.
For real.
Now look at you. And watch lottery night. We'll see. That's all I'm going to say. We'll see. Because we're still not safe. If it falls out the top six, guess where that's going? Yeah, to OKC.
We're
it's actually foolish.
We're playing right here. Let me check the score right now.
I don't even – I haven't watched a Sixers game intently watched a Sixers game in over 2 months. Because once March rolls around, pretty much all college basketball. But the Sixers really, I just – they got like creative players on the floor now. I don't even know who these guys are most of the time.
We are losing. So that's good.
Of course we are.
I'm just making sure they wasn't trying nothing funny.
Like, it's just, yeah. We'll have all day to talk about lottery teams. The news of the week was another coaching change right before the playoffs. The Grizzlies fired Taylor Jenkins, of course, but now the Nuggets fired Mike Malone, who won a championship not long ago. They also fired their general manager, Calvin Booth. At the time of the firing, the Nuggets were actually a playoff team. They still are a playoff team. But now, the winningest coach, I think he's the winningest coach in their history, right? Won their only championship. Mike Malone is no longer there. And so, everybody's confused. For me, I see it as this. Look, obviously, they don't have much confidence in where Denver was headed this year. And it shows you that way because they didn't even give Malone a chance to even one more run in the playoffs with Nikola Jokic. You said, let's just wash our hands of this right now. The writing's on the wall. The vibes are off. Let's just cut the cord now. I don't agree with it. I would have given Malone at least one more run at it, just off the strength of just who he is and what he's done for that franchise, with that franchise. To me, it's kind of just, it's poor taste. But hey, it's not my money. It's not my team. I went off on the owners at the start of the year. But hey, they do what they want to do. And so I think Denver, for me, I think they're in trouble. Because this isn't, to me, it wasn't a, I don't think it's a, the biggest weakness for me wasn't the coaching, it's the roster. And I think they won that championship a couple years ago. KCP is no longer there. Bruce Brown's no longer there. They were expecting Jamal Murray to take that next step. He's been hurt. He's never truly elevated to that next level. And for me, Michael Porter Jr., you were on borrowed time with him anyway, with his health, with his injury concerns and his body, the way that his body's breaks down. Your young guys haven't really truly fully developed like you would want to. And so I'm looking at it like a Milwaukee Bucks situation, right? They got their championship. Now what? I think Denver is sort of in that Milwaukee state now where you have this great player, but the surrounding cast. What's the upside? What's the ceiling? Have they reached the ceiling already? And I think for Denver, that's the question they have to ask. I don't know where this team goes from here. I really don't. They have some hard decisions to make, but yeah, that roster has some question marks. I'm not too confident in what they can be over the next couple of years.
Yeah, to me, for one, it's the timing of this whole thing. Like, the playoffs is coming right up. We seen it with the Grizzlies when they fired Jenkins, too. But this was even like, bro, they fired him like a week before the playoffs, which is crazy to me. But now we're starting to hear swindlings of it was a rift between him and Booth, the GM, over Westbrook playing or the rookie that Booth drafted playing. We're hearing stuff about that. Reports are coming out about him giving Westbrook special treatment. We saw that he kind of called out the team last week saying that he said they don't watch film, they don't pay attention to their minutes, stuff like that. Saying they're not worried about the little things. So my only question is how do Jokic feel about this? I would assume they had to consult him. But it's just funny to me, the media, they're not saying anything about Jokic in this whole ordeal. But if it was Bron got him fired, or if it was KD, one of those guys, oh, he got him fired. It's just funny. But, hey, I mean, it's definitely odd to me. I felt like you at least got to finish the season, though. But, obviously, something had to be going on deeper in that locker room. The fire, the GM, and the coach a week before the playoffs, like, we've never seen anything like that. I don't know. Like, that's pretty crazy to me. So, it's not like they were at the bottom. Where are they? They're the fourth seed.
They were like a top four team when they got fourth fired, seed, I believe.
Still got Jokic, like, Jamal Murray, we know he's not having the best season, but we already know. I tell people all the time, playoff Jamal Murray and regular season Jamal Murray is two different people. If you get him and Jokic playing good, and they can be anybody in a seven-game series if they're playing, if they're both on the same page, both locked in, because we've seen it already. So, I don't know. I mean, the real problem for them also is they never recovered from losing KCP and Bruce Brown. They never recovered. They never filled that void. They've tried to put different pieces in there. They just haven't filled that. They haven't filled that void. So for the future, I don't know how it's going to look, honestly. Denver's not like a big free agency attraction either. That's another problem that they have. So, but I mean, you got Jokic, man. Like, you got Jokic. You guys got to keep making some smart moves like you did in the past. And we'll see where it goes. It's not going to be easy, but I don't think their future is so bleak, because Jokic is still in his prime. And he's the type player where he can have a prime for a long time because his game is all skill and IQ. He doesn't have a lot of – I mean, he's not using a lot of his body to really, you know, get his game off. So they just got to keep making the right moves, and you never know what can happen in the NBA. Things shape up crazy all the time. But I just think it's odd.
Yeah, man, I'll say it again about these owners, man. They have all this money, and they do what they want to do. Sometimes the decision, like, well, you you're tripping. And so I think this was another example of the Nuggets ownership just not even thinking what this means basketball wise and how crucial this time, the timing of it is, and what this means for the future. And is this roster even capable right now as constructed of winning a championship? And if that's the case, then maybe the GM was the issue, and maybe it wasn't Mike Malone. Maybe you try to figure out, how can we retool this roster? Maybe we got to look at how we're evaluating talent. Like, to fire both pieces. Now this offseason, you have to make two big hires now, right? What does that do for the long-term situation? Like, what is the vision going to be? What type of head coach are you going to get? What type of GM are you going to get to sort of restructure and retool this roster? Good GMs aren't just running around here. They're not walking around. Like, they're not easy to find. And so that's my biggest question for the Nuggets ownership. Okay, so now what? Not only do you need a head coach, but you need a GM who both have a shared vision to see how this team can get back to competing for a championship. And I'm not sure how they go about that. They have some hard choices to make. But in let's say in 2 years, if this team is still in the same space, there's a question they have to answer. And you know what it is. And I say it all the time. At a certain point, you can't keep going through the same cycle. You can't. Or you're going to be what? The Trailblazers. The Wizards. We see what the Bucks are right now. They got their championship. You have Giannis, but are we taking them serious as a championship contender? No, we're not. And I don't think we will for the foreseeable future if they keep doing what they're doing. And Denver's going to be in the same spot if they're not careful. We'll see. From one questionable decision to a trash decision, Luka Doncic made his return to Dallas. It was pretty much a home game. It was a home game for Luka. The fans, good for them for cheering for Luka and showing their appreciation and for enjoying a Luka show, for saying, fire Nico, good for you. We said the deal was trash when they first made it. To see it play out how it's played out, it might be the worst trade I've ever seen. And you know what? I don't think it is. And this has nothing to do with Anthony Davis. Great player. I've had my criticisms of him, and I still stand on them. And we're seeing the difference between a guy like Luka versus AD. We're seeing it now. I don't think we need to go into that. This is more about you trade a generational player who's still not even in his prime yet, at the peak, not even at the peak of his powers yet. Who knows what else he might tap into? Just led your team to the NBA Finals last year. You just won the Western Conference. You punt on that for an aging, injury-prone big man who has shown that he can't carry a team. In what world does – I don't care how much hookah Luka smokes. I don't care how much Barry drinks. It was good enough to get us to the finals. And so, yeah, the Dallas Mavericks fans have every right to be upset because this is a move that can set a franchise back for years because now you're relying on two players who are approaching their mid-30s and Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, is hurt out for the year, and Anthony Davis, who I didn't even realize he was playing the other night. Did you notice him?
No.
My point exactly about AD. My point is when you need him the most, sometimes you don't even realize he's out there. The biggest guy on the court, tallest guy on the court. Where are you? We don't see you. So, yeah, the Mavs-Lakers deal was a joke. And Mavs fans have every right to be upset. Yeah, they should feel embarrassed. Mavericks ownership, they probably don't even care, honestly. They probably got bigger plans, and they're not basketball people. They're business people, right? So who knows what they got going on behind the scenes, right? It's deeper than basketball for them, right? But for the basketball fan, for the coach and staff, they should be embarrassed. There's no way you trade Luka Doncic for anybody, right? Like, I'm not trading Luka for – like, who – is there any player that you can offer me for Luka Doncic right now?
I mean, not in their situation.
If I'm the Mavericks and knowing how Luka has been able to impact Dallas and the fans, leading us to – like, No. There's just not. I mean, yes, Jokic, Giannis, like, of course. But at his age and what he's already shown, no.
It's just more so the fact they was just in the finals. He's young. He just carried you to the finals. He's a proven playoff performer, and he's young. He's the youngest. He's the youngest, like, out of all the top five, top 10 players in the league, he's the youngest. He has to be the youngest. So
he's 26.
How old is SGA? Is SGA 26 too?
He is 26. Yeah,
so them two. I was about to say them two. And, like, you're not going to trade for SGA just off the strength. It's like, Luka's already, he's engraved in Dallas. Like, it's there. Like, you already got a team built around him. You brought Kyrie, and you've seen it could work. Y'all just need to, you need to get him to buy in more. And you need to, fill out the rest of the roster. It's not all on him. For me, I just don't know. I don't even know why Nico Harrison is still the GM. They might as well just get it over with. We fired everybody else before the season, and just let him go now. It's time to go because – he's not welcome in Dallas. I don't even know how he's able to sit in the games. If that was at Philly, if that was in Wells Fargo, he would have been up in a suite somewhere with security for real because there's no way he was out there chilling and the camera just showing him in the crowd chilling, looking dumb. But, man, I'm just happy that Luka went off. I'm happy that he went off. I know it was an emotional, experience for him. But we got to talk about how he came to the game in the whip, before he walked out. You know what I mean? It was just cool to see. And that has to be the best, revenge slash return game that I've seen. It's probably the best in history. It has to be 45. But it's just crazy because it's not like it ended on his terms. You know, he didn't want to leave. We know Bron wanted to leave. KD wanted to leave. Shaq wanted to leave. He didn't want to leave. They just traded him out of nowhere. But, you know, I, as a fan, I just wonder how that feels. It's like, damn, I know they was happy to see him killing. But at the same time, it's like, damn, we really let him go. But then again, are there really even Mavs fans anymore? I feel like the fan base is done. I would be done. The fan base is cooked. Like, nah, I don't think they have a fan base. It's going to be a long time before they get real fans back in Dallas. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how that looks.
You were gifted a truly elite player for a franchise that historically, yeah, they seem like they're always in the running for big name free agents, but you never get them. But you were gifted this guy on draft night. You've seen him do all these amazing things. He dropped 70, right? Made the finals when they weren't a favorite to make it. Like, yes, he has his flaws, and there's no perfect player, but you just don't trade a guy like that. You just, especially a guy who isn't unhappy with this situation. There was nothing coming out that said Luka was tired of the Mavericks organization. If anything, his tears the other night showing the video showed you how much he loved being a Dallas Maverick and he loved the city and the fans. Not only did you trade him, you traded him for a player. Anthony Davis is what, 32?
Yep.
I think we've seen the best of Anthony Davis. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
You trade him for a player who I think we've seen his best. A player who isn't built to carry a franchise. A player who really, when it comes to elevating others around him, I don't see it. And so in the basketball sense, I always take it back to having the basketball conversation. Does it make basketball sense? There's no way in, there's no shape, there's no world, there's no universe that this makes sense. Nico said defense wins championships. Yeah, it does. But elite players win championships. Let's not get it twisted. It's always like let's focus on real talk here. A backcourt that includes Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, Max Christie. That's not going to win you a championship. Am I tripping? Am I on another planet here? Spencer Dinwiddie. What made Dallas so lethal and special was that they had two guys in Kyrie and Luka that can just go at any given moment. Now, no Luka. Remember all the Derek Lively hype?
Yep.
Where's the Derek Lively hype at?
I think, has he been hurt? I don't even know if he's been playing. I think he's been hurt all year. I don't know.
But
all that was a product of Luka, too.
Luka elevates those around him. You already had Daniel Gafford and Lively.
Right.
That was good enough. PJ, like, you had guys who would focus on their roles. Defensive-minded, lob threats, crashing the board. Like, you had the team. Guys that were focused on their roles. We know Luka and Kyrie, get your game off. And you just messed it up. And so, meanwhile, the Lakers, it's sort of reversed. While Dallas had, like, the next 10 years, we got Luka. Like, we can figure this thing out. With the Lakers, it was like, okay, LeBron, he'll be out of here soon. AD, do we really want to hand him the keys? Because he hasn't really shown that he's able to do that or wants to do that. Now, they got a whole new lease on their life. They done gave the Lakers a new superstar. It always happens somehow. Now the Lakers have Luka for the next decade, surround him with guys that can hoop and go, because you know people are going to want to play in LA and want to play with Luka. And yeah, I just, this is the worst trade that I can recall. that I've seen, and definitely in the NBA. There's no way you can make this make sense. It just doesn't. And so, yeah, I feel for the Mavericks fans, man. They're a play-in team, at least. Hey, you're a play-in team. Maybe you'll sting into the playoffs. I don't know, but I don't see you getting too much further from that without Kyrie playing. So that's a wasted year, honestly. Kyrie will be a year older. AD will be a year older. What are you doing next year? Klay Thompson, a year older. Like, what are we talking about here? What are we even doing? So good luck with that. I don't know what to tell y'all. Any final thoughts? Any other thing we missed before we close this thing out?
Nah, that's pretty much everything. Just getting ready for the playoffs, ready to see how the West shakes out. The East is pretty much settled, I mean, for the most part. So,
yeah.
Some interesting games tonight and Sunday, and then, you know, on to the playoffs. So, that's what I'm waiting for.
Look, when it comes to the East, I think the Celtics are going to win the East. I just don't. I mean, we'll talk more about it, but the West to me is more interesting. I think that's more open up for like conversation. Eastern Conference wise, to me, watch the Jaylen Brown situation. I think he's dealing with an injury right now, so we got to watch that. But that might be something that provides a speed bump. But if he's healthy, if they're healthy, Porzingis is healthy and right. I know Cleveland's having a great year, but. I don't know. 7-game series. I got to see it, and I haven't seen it from them yet. So we'll see. Thank you guys for watching. Next time, we'll be talking about the playoffs. Crazy. I know. But, yeah, we here. It's that time. And so, yeah, enjoy talking some hoops with y'all tonight. Remember to follow us on Twitter, Marshall Time Podcast. Hit us up on Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Like, subscribe, share, post. We appreciate all the support. We'll talk to y'all next time.
All right, peace out.